As I said, we make it in the role, also it feels perhaps a bit exhausting for you, but we will do it. So I would like to go on to our next speaker, which is Howard Cagle. Good. Howard Cagle is professor of modern European philosophy at King's University in London and previously taught at Department of History at Goldsmiths University of London. Cagle research interests range from philosophy, aesthetics, and religion to sociology and culture history. He's also author of the book on resistance, A Philosophy of Defense, and that was when we met because you were as well invited to the Colleges of Critique, where we had the possibility to talk with you about your book, which was very, very intense and interesting. And you were as well twice fellow at the DCRL, as I heard. So I'm very much looking forward to your input now and your inspiration and towards the theme we set. And welcome with me, please, Howard Cagle.
So thanks, Alia. Tania Bruguera's work since the 1990s has mounted one of the most single-minded assaults on the autonomy of art to date. Whether in her actions or longer-term projects, the notion of the artist and the artwork, as well as the parameters of their relations to institutions such as the museum, church, and state, have been pushed to their limit. In works such as the Immigrant Movement International, that Alia asked us to look at, but also in my own personal favorite project, the campaign for the canonization of Giordano Bruno. This has provoked the formation of a new lexicon of ethics and new criteria for assessing the impact of interventions. But it has also exposed what was previously known as art to new risks and challenges, especially as it enters fields and practices informed by violence and implicit or explicit states of war. And this entry, I think, has to date been imperfectly theorized, and in particular, the strategy of escalation that has always informed Bruguera's work and is central to the new activisms of Extinction Rebellion and, at this very moment, currently being engaged in Hong Kong. Let's look at a work by Bruguera, an action that poses these questions with extreme urgency, and it's an urgency that I missed in the distinctly mellow, even sentimental, Tate Commission that Alia also asked us to consider. This is a work called Self-Sabotage, and it comprises two performances from 2009. The first took place on March the 6th at the Jeu de Paume in Paris, the second on June the 5th at the Venice Biennale. On both occasions, Bruguera gave a talk, an artist talk on art strategy and activism with the title Culture as a Strategy to Survive. It was a talk divided into four parts with marked intervals. In the first interval, she loaded a .38 caliber pistol, spun the cylinder and pulled the trigger, playing Russian roulette. Here's a clip from the Venice performance. Remember, this is the second and so far and hopefully last performance of this action. And I'd like to invite you to pay particular attention to less to the artist than to the audience, who, remember, knew what the artist intended to do. And I'd like you to reflect on the meaning of their silence.
Artists should self-sabotage within the expectations we have created. Within the expectations we have created with our work. We should do likewise with the expectation of previous design careers in which it seems that artists are small corporation managers, demonstrating the productive capacity of concept linked with the conception of a capitalist society. and not to propose a new idea of society, a society that might not yet exist, a society we intend to create. Artists should self-sabotage in our relationship with others in the world of art by not pleasing them, and especially not pleasing the institutions. Artists should self-sabotage by quitting our work, by leaving our comfortable position and looking for difficult sites, one that we do not understand. Leave design aside and live. Ephemera as a way of surviving in others. Works of art should use social time, and spectators should leave aside being a spectator and become social beings or civil persons to see. It could also be said to be in the world. Creators should also transform, because political art should deal with ethics, and to value this discourse, we should leave the representation of world and enter the world of power relationship. Then aesthetic will rather be the effectiveness of this relationship, and beauty will be seen as the moment in which these utopias materialize. The idea, I might say, the pressure that as artists we have to do things that will make us survive is something we should reject, because it's conditioned the ideas of art as archive, as an index, and not art as a contextual answer, as an answer to the present moment. Political art should stop using references and start creating references. Artists should stop and start from scratch, from a place that is not self-nostalgic, a site where all our insecurities are present, an insecure place, a place that is not self-important, a place where art is not an important concept. Art should not be art should not be an appropriate decision, but a concept appearing later.
So, apart from what seems to be a discreetly whispered objection by a member of the audience to the moderator, the audience remains silent. Is this the silence of friends or enemies? What is the quality of their anesthesia? Is it violent, indifferent, violently indifferent, polite, kind of in role? Bruguera responded to the whispered inquiry that she was fine, but how could she have been fine given that the audience, confronted by this extreme gesture, had once more confirmed her worst fears about art and its audience? You know, they sat there in silence. I think that she decided, in spite of their culpable silence, that they were in the end friends, and so shot the gun in the air. But it raises the question of what it would have taken to have shaken the audience out of their aesthetic anesthesia, where she would have had to have pointed the gun. How, though, can we explain or even understand this silence, where the refusal to speak, to intervene, to try to stop this brutal kind of performance, was conspicuously absent? Was there an understanding in the audience, especially the man with the annoying white hat, that because this was art, there was no real gun and no real bullets and thus no real risk? That this was just a semblance, just the shine of a deadly risk, and that there was never any possibility of the unforeseen happening? But how could they be so secure, so comfortable about this? I mean, this is, after all, Tania Bruguera. And when she handed out cocaine to the audience in the Bogota action, it was real cocaine. And the words she was speaking about exposing art to violence were very kind of clear and explicit, almost a manifesto. Maybe this is a too friendly an explanation of their silence. They thought it was art, and the autonomy of art secured them and the artist from any real consequences. It granted them immunity. Or were they there to see her die, prepared for the gun barrel to stick and for the artist to kill herself? An interesting art event, one in which one could live on having been present at. Or another option, was there complete faith in the artist's mastery of appearances? That even if the gun and the bullets were real, she was nevertheless properly prepared to manage the event aesthetically as a thrilling performance, a bravura representation, like a fire eater or the artist as stunt person. How can we know why the audience were silent? What we can know, though, is that on both the occasions that self-sabotage was performed, the audience remained silent, prepared to frame even this eruption of violence, even the presence of a weapon, you know, on the scene of art, aesthetically and even enthusiastically applauding it at the end. In fact, the audience went only later, the audience during the Q&As, realized what had been done, and the main complaint was about the violence that had been directed against them, rather than any sympathy or care for the artists. So this action seemed to provoke a severe case of anaesthetics, that there was an aesthetic neutralization of the ethical on the part of the audience. But then Bruguera was not risking her life for art, quite the opposite. And perhaps this friendly and or inimical silence of the audience confirmed everything she was saying in her lecture about activating new structures of power with what she called mobile structures of observation, as opposed to the seated 19th century static contemplative audience position that she was facing in the very act of challenging it. In her address, she begins with a critique of survival that is drawn from situationist international texts, and then a call for strategy as opposed to representation. And this is an important aspect of her work, which is the alignment of art with strategy, that is the management of violent force, and instead of the alignment of art and representation. So after pulling the trigger for a second time, Bruguera proposes in her address that, I quote her, the audience should stop being protected. And after the third spin, she proposed that political art should deal with ethics, and to value this discourse, we should leave the representational world and enter the world of power relationships. So aesthetics as strategy. The calls for insecurity, for welcoming the unforeseen, were met with a distinctly unethical and aesthetized reaction. The applause, unfortunately, was not ironic. It was an applause that was innocent of strategy and thus of its own implication in the violence of what had just been done. The contrast with the reception of another work from 2009, Tatlin's Whisper 6, where speakers in Havana were invited to a microphone for a minute of free speech, I don't think would have been lost on Bruguera, especially when it was restaged on December the 30th, 2014, on the Plaza de la Revolución and interrupted by her violent arrest. When, on May 20th, 2015, she began a semi-public reading of Arendt's Origins of Totalitarianism, construction workers were sent to noisily dig up the road and interrupt the reading, leading to eventual rearrest, what at least was clear is that her enemies were not silent, that they paid her the compliment of responding strategically to her strategic intervention. Her political proposition was met by a political refutation, unlike the case of the friends of her art. Art had entered, in short, the arena of strategy, which was her and is her intention. But there remain problems around the strategies of art, speech, politics, and violence that are unresolved in this practice. In Self-Sabotage, Bruguera aligns the orders of strategy and politics. So she thinks strategy and politics are the same thing. But this elision between military strategy and political speech is certainly not one that Hannah Arendt would have countenanced. In fact, in her later work on violence, it was one that she explicitly opposed. The transformation of violence into speech is politics for Arendt, and I think she's right, while strategy remains the prerogative of a violent actor who is at war in a field of force with an enemy. And the problem with art entering into the field of force and violence, which was precisely Bruguera's proposition when she calls for an alignment with strategy, is that the intervention is directed towards and, to be effective, must provoke escalation. Bruguera would use art to escalate struggle, which sounds like a good thing. Art can intensify political struggle, but also with that, violence. Seeing art as contributing to the attainment of political speech and action in a controlled escalation of violence. In this respect, her work provided a foundation not only for her politicization of art, but also for the possibility of an act of activism as the strategic aestheticization of politics. Art and activism can meet on this terrain. Both are committed to a controlled escalation of political demands, organization and violence, wagering that the escalation of violence can be controlled through the strategic mobilization of a form of aesthetic immunity, that art can be used to escalate struggle, but it can also be used to de-escalate it. A certain mobilization in the interests of political action of what remains of the promise of the autonomy of art. The implementation by activism of the program of controlled escalation that is influentially theorized by the Engler brothers in their 2016 strategic manual, This is an Uprising, which is motivated the strategy of Extinction Rebellion, deliberately used the aesthetic as a means to provoke and crucially contain the escalation of political demands and violence. So they see the aesthetic precisely as a pharmacon, that it is both, you know, it can instigate violence, but it can also de-intensify kind of violence. Environmental activism then meets Bruguera's activist art around the Berta Cáceres, the pink boat named after the Honduran environmental activist murdered in 2016. So I'd like to show you how the Berta Cáceres was used in the first and so far only successful campaign of Extinction Rebellion.
Thank you.
Okay, Extinction Rebellion correctly were correctly advised that there was no law against mooring a boat on Oxford Circus. So taking a boat there and mooring it would not be an illegal action. But it also provided an aesthetic focus for the struggle. It was a way to escalate while appearing to remain within an aestheticized frame, a means to intensify but also to de-intensify struggle. And in the words of James and Ruby, and James and Ruby were the artist strategists of the XR roadblock, the action earned them a few days in which, they say, the police mostly let us be, as well as creating a show and a traffic-stopping opportunity, but also a way of providing an exit. So as the violence began to intensify towards the end of the action, when the police changed their strategy, removing the boat was an immediate kind of invitation to de-escalate. So the aesthetic provided a means of escalating the action, but also of de-escalating it. The object, the pink boat, provided a form of aesthetic immunity for the struggle, but one which, towards the end, seemed fragile and perhaps not repeatable. The injunction to tell the truth to power meshed with the aesthetic phenomena of a ready-made boat painted pink. But you don't have to be a reader of Clausewitz or even Arendt to worry about how far escalation can be kept under control, and with it the transformation of political speech into uncontrolled and uncontrollable violence. So, should interventionist art then restrict itself to reformist actions, accepting the parameters of law-abiding liberal reforms, or should it take the risk of the unforeseen consequences of escalation? Thank you.